Let's make it happen, Captain.
Well, I don't know if we're in the Death Star tonight. I'm Gov Maharaj, and welcome to Defrag. Larry is not here today. He is in Vegas, I believe. So I'm flying solo with you folks. Let's just get right down to it. This is the third part of my series on compatibility and migration from previous operating systems. And I kind of wanted to go into some of the tools, additionally some of the tools that we've gone into before, but from a little bit different perspective. What can you do as an end user or an IT admin or a small business user that is currently on XP that has applications or processes, which is really what it is, right? You have a workflow. And how can you determine what types of issues you're going to have, and why are we actually in this, you know, what I like to call Chicken Little mode, you know, the sky is falling. What things could have been done to prevent it, both from, you know, a company perspective as well as an end user perspective. So, like, to give a little bit of history, Windows XP was released in 2001. And we've had three service packs since then. The latest service pack, XPSP 3, was released, I believe, in 2004. So if we go through the development timeline, we had Windows 2000, which was released 99-2000, and we released XP as the bridge between getting folks off of Win95, the Win9X platform, onto the more solid NT platform in order to reconcile the two, so we didn't have entirely two separate kernels and code bases to have to deal with. And we proved that code base in 2000, primarily with the enterprise customers, the company crowd. And then we produced XP as the evolution of 2000 for our end users, our home users. And I don't know too many people, you know, if they still remember that transition from 9X to 2000. It was actually pretty big. You know, it was a very big change for end users. It was also a very good change for end users. Now, for anyone that remembers directly when XP released, it was not necessarily the best thing since sliced bread, right? You still had crashes. We still had to deal with compatibility issues. Nothing was actually perfect. Now, come Service Pack 1 and Service Pack 2, things have gotten a lot better. Applications have evolved. They've been updated. So they were rewritten, essentially, to take advantage of the XP platform. So we move forward again, and as the XP platform ages, you know, gets older or matures, more applications are being written for it. ISVs don't have to have as many different code bases because they don't need to target 9X as much anymore. So you've got this maturing platform of XP plus maturing applications that are taking advantage of all of XP's new code and nuances. Now, as a company, what we did right after XP was work on Windows 2003. Now, that was a server platform. And much of the things that we learned out of producing Server 2003, we backported in the form of XPSP 2 and XPSP 3. We didn't produce a client platform unless you count XP 64-bit, but that was never really adopted too heavily. So in 2004, releasing server platform. And then as we continue along, since there was not a client release, really, at that point, people are still using XP. So in the 2004-2005 timeframe, we're now working on the next version of Windows, which is Vista. And the hope was, as a company, we wanted people to move to the next version of the OS, right? So people that were on XP, we would like them to move to Vista. So as we're making Vista, we're producing it. That was the introduction of UAC. That was the change of the version from 5.1 and 5.2 corresponding to XP and Server 2003 to version 6. It was a major change in the OS. lots of new security features. It was basically bringing in the era of a modern operating system, new compilers, new ways of doing setup, making it faster. There's a lot of different changes in the time frame. And again, remember, XP releasing 2000-2001 and Vista, which released in 2006. That's a 5-year difference with a lot of changes happening in the entire industry. Okay, so we're working on Vista. We released Vista, hoping people move from Vista, from XP to Vista. And then we start working on the next OS release, which is Windows 7, which released in 2009. Now, based on the industry, a lot of people were still only moving from NT in 2000, this is especially in the enterprise, to XP by the time that we're pushing out Vista. So a lot of people did not want to move. They just established their processes. And for an enterprise, it's not nearly as easy to move from one version of the platform to another version. So a lot of folks said, hey, this is just working for me. I'm going to stay on XP and I'll move to the next version. I'll skip Vista and I'll move to the next version. So we produce Win 7, which released in 2009, 9 years after XP. That's a long time. It's nearly a decade. Now folks are, you know, they're much more willing, you know, almost a decade later to try to move to a new version of the platform. And then after Win 7 is produced, we're now working on Win 8, which releases in 2012. And then we release Windows 8.1 the next year in 2013. So we have enterprises that have just moved on to Win 7 that are just getting their platforms established, they've got their applications updated, and now we produce another version. And they're going, well, hang on, we've just moved to it, it's really difficult, you know, what can you do to help us? And we basically now land in the timeline of when folks are not constantly iterating to the next version, it makes it much more difficult. Had folks moved to Vista from XP when we had released it, again, barring all of the complications involved, if they'd moved on to Vista and then moved on to Win 7 and then moved on to Win 8 as more of a regular cadence, then it would not nearly be as difficult to go from XP to Win 7 directly or XP to Win 8 platform directly. Because as you're moving from platform to platform, you're evolving your own business, you're evolving your own processes, as opposed to being locked into a process that was relevant 10 years ago or that was working for you 10 years ago. So here we are today. We would like to have everybody moving with a cadence to the latest operating system to get the, you know, the goodness of the new technology, the new security fixes, the new performance enhancements, taking advantage of your new hardware. As enterprises would buy new hardware, they would automatically install XP, a much older operating system. So it's not taking advantage of all of the new things. We've had some complaints, interesting complaints, about folks that are wanting to go from XP to Win 7 or Win 8 directly while keeping their settings and applications intact. They basically just want to swap out the OS and swap in the new OS and just have everything work. Now, there are a lot of reasons why this doesn't work, primarily because XP being a 32-bit operating system, if you want to move to the latest OS, 64-bit has basically taken over as the default. Virtually all x86 chips today are capable of running x64 operating system. So you can't take a 32-bit OS with the 32-bit drivers that were installed and simply upgrade it to the 64-bit OS. Why? Because of path limitations. So you had an application installed on a 32-bit OS into program files. In the 64-bit land, that would be installed to program files x86. Now, you have all of those paths on the file system. Then you have the registry. Then you have things like 32-bit components that don't work on a 64-bit OS, like 32-bit shell extensions, for example. They would not work in the 64-bit shell. There's the drivers, of course, so 64-bit driver will not work, 32-bit driver will not work on a 64-bit OS. So you have all of these limitations, and especially on the driver side, the one of the biggest changes that we went from XP to Vista, so this is, again, 2006 timeframe, was the requirement on signed drivers. So 64-bit required signed drivers. 32-bit in Vista did not require signed drivers. But that was another reason. So you don't have signed drivers, generally speaking, on XP. It was never a requirement. And for vendors, if they know their primary user base is on XP, they would not go through the additional requirement of signing their drivers. So that would be another point of failure in trying to take a 32-bit OS like XP and just do a surgical move of settings and data onto a newer operating system. So that's a little bit of history, and sorry if it's sounding, you know, long-winded, but there's just a lot of baggage when you're trying to go from something that old to something brand new. Think about it in terms of, you know, when you're moving a house, it's really, really difficult to say, well, I also want to take the fridge with me, I also want to take the cabinets with me, I want to take, you know, the basement with me. You generally don't do that. When you're moving, you basically look at, well, what are the things that I absolutely must take with me? You put them in boxes and you move them slowly to the new house, or you have a moving company move it for you. That's another migration strategy, is that you don't have to do it yourself. You can bring in consultants to help you move for you, but you need to actually understand what it is that you have running. What are your processes? What is your line of business needs in order to just move the things that you must move to the new system? Or evaluating it and looking at, well, what is in the new system that would actually allow me to do my business better? It's not necessarily the right thing to say, well, what I was doing 10 years ago is exactly what I need to be doing today, because you're also not evolving. There's kind of, there's really not much benefit for you, right? If you're not evolving with your business, then, you know, you're just going through a lot of pain swapping out the OS. As you're going through these migrations, you should be self-evaluating, you know, what is it that I truly need to do? And look at what the new systems are bringing to you, evaluate them, and see, well, how can I do it better? Like, what can I take advantage of that would help me do this better? So the next part that I wanted to talk about was some of the tools. If you're still running an older version of the operating system, as you're evaluating your processes, what can you do to take a look at your apps and devices and say, well, will I have a higher likelihood of something that needs replacing or something that I should go talk to my vendor about? Because as operating systems evolve, we do things like we fix bugs. You know, that's what everybody asks us to do, is we fix bugs. And as part of fixing bugs, we get tighter on the requirements, right? Because as we had bugs in a previous operating system, people will write software and drivers that will either implicitly or explicitly take advantage of those bugs. Some of them could be minor memory corruptions, like, for example, we talked about this in a previous show about heap allocation overruns. So if in a previous OS we were not quite as aggressive on our garbage cleanup, an app could get away with corrupting the heap and we might not know it, right? You might get a random crash every now and again while the process exits, but otherwise it sort of kind of just keeps working, but you would never really know. Or you might have this weird data corruption that you could run a database cleanup operation on and it would fix itself, and that's just kind of how you've been doing your business over the years. But in a future OS, we might get more aggressive on our garbage cleanup, you know, to handle lower memory devices. So what you can do in order to see, hey, do I have these types of latent bugs in my application, are to use something like the application verifier. This is part of the AppCompat toolkit, and this particular MSDN article is DD371695. It's actually encompasses the entire Win7 AppCompat cookbook. There's a bunch of best practices here. There's a standard user analyzer, which I'm sure many of you have used or heard of. It's another tool to help you understand what applications that are running on XP that might have problems if you're trying to run under a standard user environment, because XP, by default, everybody is an admin and there was no UAC. So the application verifier tool is basically a set of checks. Some of them are, you know, reasonably intelligent, others are not quite as intelligent. But they help you basically check things like exception handling, changes. You know, does your app throw excessive exceptions? Would any of those exceptions no longer be handled in a future OS? Handle leaks, heap leaks, TLS leaks, thread pool leaks. There's a lot of leak checks in here. Access denied checks. You can go through this list. And basically, it's kind of like running your app under the debugger. You run it under the debugger with a set of test hooks, and it just validates input to the various APIs. And it will allow you to break into the debugger as these things are hit. Now, if these are in-house applications that you've written, you have a chance, hopefully, that you have source and symbols in order to go and fix these bugs before going to the next OS. If they're third-party applications, then you contact your vendor in order to get either an updated version of the app or a patch for the app that would address these issues. So this is one tool that I find is extremely handy in just getting a better handle on, well, is this app just a generally misbehaving app? Is it a high-quality application? Right? And then you can go through and say, well, you know, I have X, Y, and Z apps. Which ones are my worst offenders? Can I just drop them? Do I need to carry them forward? How much effort, how much investment do I need to put into these applications in order to make them continue to work on the next version of the OS? That's Application Verifier. And the next one, and this is particularly for drivers, is Driver Verifier. And this comes built into the OS. There are oodles and oodles of checks in here. This KB is 244.617. Now, in order to properly use Driver Verifier, you need to be under a kernel debugger. Now, the kernel debugger, how to do that is KB. Well, not a KB, but article HH439378. For those of you that haven't used a kernel debugger, it's actually relatively easy, especially if you're on an XP era hardware system. You basically want to do it over serial. If you're on a newer system, like a much newer system, I personally prefer network debugging or USB 3 debugging. But oftentimes, a very simpler approach is if you can install whatever particular driver that you are caring about into a VM, as long as it's not necessarily having to deal with hardware, you can use a VM in order to do your kernel debugging on one physical machine. And Driver Verifier is included with the OS. If you just hit Run Verifier, you get this manager, which will help you set the particular settings that you're looking for. Now, generally speaking, I would only look for one set of checks at a particular time. It just makes things a little bit simpler. But here's a list of all of the various checks. You can put the driver under special pool. So that means all of its allocations are specially tagged under a separate pool of memory so that it can better look for corruptions. Urkel checking, low resource simulation, there are a bunch of various options here. And basically, I would only choose one. And if you hit next, you can select driver names from a list. I always choose the fourth option because I never go for the standard set of options. I like to control my verifier. So this will produce an entire list. You basically skip all the ones that are part of the OS. There's really no point. We're already doing beyond driver verifier runs on the OS binaries. But and these ones, these dump ones, they're also part of the OS. You can skip those. Basically look for third parties. So, you know, Intel, if you wanted to check your video driver, if you happen to have a very old video driver. Storage controllers would be another one. Let's see, what do I have in here that would be interesting? Marvel, so this is the wireless. Macrovision, yeah, that's DRM. A lot of Microsoft ones. I mean, it is a Surface. There's not a lot of, for expansion here. But, yeah, I would pick one that would be, you know, a piece of hardware that was very critical for you. You know, if you're in the automation business, you know, you might have a very particular type of controller that you need to make sure keeps working and that it may not have updates. Right, or the updates are few and far between. So you want to make sure if you've standardized on something that it will not give you any issues. You use Driver Verifier for that, and coupled with the kernel mode debugger, you can see if there's any issues with it. As you keep going, you can verify more and more drivers that are on your system, and you can add more and more tests to it. Don't go overboard. Don't try to add all of them at the same time. There's, as part of the article, it will tell you, you know, which ones are standard tests, which ones are additional tests, in order to have a better idea how resilient your driver is. Another thing to check, and people rarely ever do this, but if you have MSDN subscriptions, which I'm sure a lot of our viewers do, is testing on a partially checked build. Now, check builds, for those that don't know, are a type of build that adds additional instrumentation, a little additional debug checks that are for finding issues a lot sooner, things that even Driver Verifier may not be able to find. They're usually pretty subtle, but for hard-to-find bugs or for bugs or for issues that you're having that are really intermittent and really hard to track down, I suggest not usually loading an entire checked OS, but a check kernel and check HAL. So this article is FF542286. And this tells you how to go through the boot options, whether or not you're on a pre-Vista system, which uses the boot INI style way of changing your boot options, or post-Vista, which uses the boot CFG. Style issues to set your check HAL and check kernel. Now, remember when you're doing this, you always want to match your HAL and kernel together. And basically, it'll just be another option in your boot menu, and you get to choose that. And if you have that coupled with the kernel debugger, you'll be able to do a lot of things like being able to find issues a lot sooner. And again, very, very subtle corruptions, things that, you know, the driver should not be doing and is not handled by Driver Verifier for one reason or the other, are often extremely, extremely valuable. And you can do this basically if you're on XP or Vista, Win 7, Win 8, it doesn't matter. And you can just try it, right? You can just take your driver, run it on the new OS, it might look fine, run it under a check kernel, see what happens. Okay, I think I have gone over a ton of information for you guys. It's a little bit more whirlwind this week. But what I'd like for you to do, if you can, is send me back mails about some of the really hard issues that you've had while trying to migrate, for any of you that have had migration experience going from an older OS to a newer one. Do you have cases where, say, a particular version of the application is the last one? Your vendor has gone out of business, they're not around anymore, they're not going to update it. You know, what kind of issues did you have while migrating that app or that device or whatever? And I'd like to hear about those stories, whether you're an end user or an enterprise that might be watching this, because, you know, we'd like to help, for one, and we'd like to know, what would have, even if this app or driver was not able to go to the next OS, what would you guys have liked to have seen to make your life simpler while going through this process? So that's the show for this week. Again, you know, let me know by writing in what you guys want to see, what additional questions you have in terms of compatibility and migration. And we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot.